Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 434. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is going on, sir?
Not a heck of a lot, considering I've missed, like, what, 4 or 5 weeks in a row now? And didn't even, for various reasons, we didn't get to show up last week at all. We apologize for that, by the way.
Yeah, it's been a little rough go of it between playoff games for myself, illness for myself and for Jeremy. Shahid always has an interesting schedule. That is not a normal 9-to-5 office job schedule that he carries. So that's always a little bit challenging too. So yeah, there is really a lot of wrestling that could be covered, because we've it's long done. Never even said nary a word about the Ric Flair 30 for 30. Just because that was one of those weeks that it's. Some best laid plans did not go well. Still,
we had that feels like ages ago.
yeah, it feels like ages ago. So it's kind of funny that the both of us were scratching our heads a little bit. You verbalized it, but. There wasn't a whole lot sticking out in my memory, though. Survivor Series was a fun event. The TakeOver was fun, but everything since then has just kind of been there.
We are in totally in. Let's just get to the Rumble season.
Like I said, they did a better job, than they usually do with Survivor Series, so I guess they shouldn't bitch too much there. Calendar is shortening for when the downturn is.
Oh, there are years the downturn takes place immediately after SummerSlam. They did a great job of keeping some interesting things going for the fall on both shows. So yeah, I'm definitely not complaining about this. You know, it's time of year. You got a lot going on. I imagine, I don't think there's going to be anything keeping me from watching the next Clash of Champions show on the 17th. But if there is, oh well, I guess I'm just missing AJ Styles versus Jinder Mahal, you know. it's definitely a slow period for WWE, although not a slow period in the Raw and SmackDown women's divisions.
They have brought up six ladies and put them in a group and said, oh, let's just have a potpourri of everything in each group so that neither of them makes a whole lot of sense when you're looking at them.
No. There's no rhyme or reason why these people are all together. I mean, on Raw, at least you have Paige, who has, you know, many years of main roster experience and is very well known, so she can, you know, help get Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville over, you know,
right,
by being an over character herself. But over on SmackDown, oh boy, are all three of those girls on swing, sink, or swim territory here. They have no nets. I mean, Ruby Riott was not known. I don't know if Ruby Riott was in NXT long enough, really, or had enough time on NXT TV long enough to really develop any kind of, you know, personality or charisma. She's, you know, I don't recall a lot of, you know, talking from Ruby Riott.
She has to be the
spokesperson for this group.
Well, and it definitely
that's not
she,
named
she was definitely the mouthpiece, because she was in A, she's been in the middle of everything that they've done, and B, she was still the go-between between Liv Morgan and oh shit, I'm trying to remember what that other woman's name is.
Sarah Logan,
yeah.
Yeah, Sarah Logan, who only was in the you know, Mayan classic, you know, Blink If You Missed Her, did some TV, you know, TV, you know, enhancement work on NXT. But
oh, okay.
Apparently they think high enough of her to have brought her up for this role. I mean, I guess none of the five women brought up from NXT were really in the thick of things on NXT TV, so you're not disturbing any storylines there. You could certainly debate whether, you know, the readiness of any of the five NXT women, probably Ruby Riott, the most ready. Mandy Rose was purposely kept off of NXT TV because of her look. They really just, you know, they were gonna, and the fact that she has, you know, in training and on the NXT, you know, house shows, she is apparently, you know, she shines very well, and yeah, it is has been a project for some time.
I guess I haven't really, I know that Mandy Rose hasn't really been on TV at all. But it's kind of interesting that, if she's not there because of her look, is it because she's...
She's there because of her look, but she's had potential from day one. She's... apparently, an excellent athlete, has poise and presence, charisma. I mean, she's definitely someone that they have a lot of they feel has a lot of potential.
Oh, okay, yeah, I feel so not qualified to even talk about her. In a lot of ways, and they really haven't given her as much to work with either, just because Paige definitely is, as you pointed out, a leader of the Raw group. The Ruby Riott one, I know that I've seen at least enough of her to know that she really popped up right before... it was when Sanity was... who were they giving problems to? So I feel like it was around WrestleMania.
Hodgepodge, baby faces.
Oh, yeah, because there's No Way Jose, and was it Roderick Strong?
Roderick Strong, and I don't remember the third one, but I remember Cassius Ohno, I think, got plugged in.
Oh, was it a Tommy, and Ohno got plugged in for him? But anyway, I feel like she was introduced right around that time frame. So I saw some stuff, but she definitely had more in-ring work from what I saw than promo time. And she was definitely the point woman, I think, there, to get back to that original point that we jumped off from. So, yeah, the SmackDown women... just because the SmackDown women's division has usually done a better job of spreading out their talent and giving them something to do, it'll be really interesting with those three. And you said that too. But the one thing that really stood out to me was they wrestled a lot of that match tonight against Charlotte. And Charlotte is huge next to them. Like,
yeah.
None of them, like, they're all probably closer to Alexa Bliss size than Charlotte, and even Naomi was a good chunk bigger than them too. So the size discrepancy was something that that certainly stood out to me.
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, but they definitely did a good job. Well, first they took Natalya out of the match immediately, so making it 3-on-2. And they focused on, you know, the, you know, teamwork with the Riot Squad, you know, and then taking out Naomi and then being able to corner Charlotte and beat her. Definitely looked like they might just be going straight to Charlotte, Ruby Wyatt for the title, which is interesting.
Oh.
But
yeah, because she finished her off. I mean, she obviously, it was down to just Charlotte, which that was the only thing that was a little bit of a mystery to me. I'm like, is there a reason that the heel team wasn't DQ'd for this type of an attack?
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, they literally spent a lot of time outside, used the steps, injured one of their opponents, yeah, and then they were able to continue the match 3-on-1. That was a little silly, but
yeah.
I mean, for what they did to Naomi and how far they went with having her stretchered off, you imagine that. Yeah, she's not going to be on the. She should not be in the show next week.
They definitely mentioned that. And this is one good thing for the SmackDown women. They did mention that Becky Lynch is off filming the Marine 6. So she's going to be out for a couple of weeks. So the ladies over there definitely at least have one opening that is usually filled on TV that will not be there, at least for, what, probably 4 to 6 weeks, I'd say.
Yeah, it'll probably be about that long. I don't know. They probably won't keep Naomi off TV unless she's got an issue that needs to, that requires her being off TV for some time. But, you know, we're at least next week, maybe the week after, or however long, Charlotte's going to be alone. Having to face all three heels. So that at least neutralizes the size difference that she would have with any one of them.
Oh, right.
So, but no, it's definitely. Yeah, it's definitely interesting thing. I mean, obviously on both shows, when they split the women's rosters in half, eventually you were going to run out of matches or have to, you know, play certain matches to death. So bringing back Paige and bringing five new women into the mix, probably a very good idea. But at the same time, that on both shows they have to do the new, you know, each being a faction.
Oh, all heels. Yeah, that was another thing. I'm just like, you really could have just handled this a little bit different. You know, it would have been fine if, and I guess that's kind of the interesting thing, and I hadn't thought about it until we started talking about the subject, is that, you know, they've made a big deal out of signing, you know, whatever talent from NXT. It was a little bit strange that, you know, and again, both groups did it. They just kind of popped on there, and all the commissioners and GMs are like, oh, okay, cool, they're on our roster now. Like, they're just handing out contracts, I guess, to anyone that shows up on the show.
Well, at least with last week on SmackDown, when Daniel Bryan was questioned about the actions of his new signees, he coyly and, you know, and maybe a little, I'm sorry, I'm looking for, he I just had it. coyly and, you know, shadily said no comment because they may, you know, but, you know, it looks like there's possibility of a heel turn for Daniel Bryan.
Oh.
But.
Yeah.
Over on Raw, I guess you could say that, once again, well, use the excuse Kurt Angle used the cruiserweights. He's been distracted lately. He's just doing a piss poor job.
Right. yeah. It's fine. It's not fine that they both did the same thing, but hopefully
at least tonight they didn't do the same thing that they did last night. At least they did it in a different way
Oh, yeah. They definitely took different courses in taking out their teams. It did help that the SmackDown women did have a natural breaking point with Natalya being grouped in. Because it's not like Sasha Banks was going to be wrestling with Alexa Bliss. So they definitely did handle things the second evening a bit differently. And oh man, I can't tell you how terrible I think that name Absolution is.
Oh, it's awful. It's pretty bad. And it really has no meaning.
Oh no, I was like, that's not the definition of the word. Like, that's all I was sitting there thinking to myself. I'm like, did someone read the damn dictionary before they before they named this team? I was like, no. Oh, okay.
Well, I guess nobody looked at that up in the dictionary when Paige was removing the word diva from it.
Yeah, the idea, I guess, is okay, but knowing that Paige screwed Paige basically in the Paige not being on TV department, it's at least hard for yours truly to take this storyline seriously.
Yeah. There's it's. You know, and yeah, it all falls in the category that most things and most promo segments in WWE fall under. No one talks like this in real life.
Oh, yeah. So, and yeah, I don't. I guess I'm trying to figure out which group is more disparate than the other, but I'm not sure that you really can come up with a clear winner in that department. I guess just knowing Paige's character, it seems weird that she has friends, I guess. And maybe that's more just because she does have more track record on TV. And has never particularly played well with others.
None of these women on either of these factions has anything in common.
Well, I mean, you could go with the kind of more obvious matchups, like Paige and Ruby Riott. You know, if you're just going by a pure look standpoint, they definitely have a similar look to them.
Well, yeah, actually, I guess that's kind of where I was going to go. It's like each woman in each group is filling a role. You know, but none of these three roles really, really fit together.
Yeah,
I still don't see why any of these people are following Paige and Ruby Riott. And Ruby Riott has never been anything but a babyface on NXT TV. So why was Naomi so unhappy to even see her in the first place?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that aspect. Oh, yeah. So many problems, but I do think that the reasoning behind it is a good one. Like you said, when they split the rosters, both rosters were a little thin. And this does kind of help shore things up a little bit. And I think that that should be, no, even if any of these five particulars, because I mean, I don't see Paige going back down to NXT. You know, well, folding her own problems. But these five could go back down to NXT for more seasoning or something after this. But I do like the idea in general. Like, I would hope that if one of them goes down, that someone else would come up to replace them. Just from a depth standpoint, I think that'll help tell more stories overall. Because, like you said, all the storylines were getting a little bit old. So they needed a refresher, and it's going to be good for both brands.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely going to be good for both brands to have more women, more potential matchups to work with. If they do want to go with the idea of a women's Royal Rumble, this goes a long way in making that a reality. Having more women on the roster, it's definitely good. It's the most notable thing that's happened since Survivor Series.
Oh yeah, which made it did make it a pretty easy thing to start off the show with. But after that, man, things kind of drop off in a hurry. SmackDown.
SmackDown was an absolutely nothing show. So there's really nothing that really takes out. That's really worth talking about. At least, I mean, not until later in the show. So let's talk about the sad ballad of Finn Balor. From, you know, supposedly, and you know, by all intents and purposes of anyone who knew, penciled in to face Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble for quite a while, and now, not so much.
Yeah, he is. I can't say that he. I guess I'm already thinking back to for him, and somewhat apt comparison is Dolph Ziggler cashing in. Everyone going bonkers day after Mania. Jack Swagger kicks him in the head. Concussion completely derails. What could have been something, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe he would have failed like he ended up doing. I don't, you know, it's hard to play that game.
Except the issues with Finn Balor are purely creative. From having his momentum just completely derailed by the never-ending feud with Bray Wyatt, and then running into a brick wall named Kane. Yeah, and then being just treated like an afterthought at Survivor Series, and then beaten by Samoa Joe. It's just like, if the guy, if they want to say the guy is not over like a main eventer should be, well, it's a pretty much a self-fulfilling prophecy the way that they've treated him for the last, even if you don't count or don't think that the Bray Wyatt feud hurt him, being destroyed by Kane was, we talked about it, it was absolutely an experience.
Yeah, because I remember comparing that to Ambrose and Rollins, but at least Ambrose and Rollins could go back to the tag division, and everyone forgets about their loss to Braun Strowman, but Finn Balor can't go back to the tag division.
No, he can't.
In a similar manner and still be presented as serious. And yeah, it's just been down. Well, I mean, and I guess I was comparing because, you know, he has the shoulder injury during the title match, and honestly, nothing good has really come since then for him.
No, it has not been a good, I mean, yeah, it really hasn't. He really didn't do much upon his return. Then got mired in a feud with Bray Wyatt, Zed, and then just, you know, they gave him that win over AJ Styles at TLC, which is in retrospect just, you know, really stupid. But I guess
yeah.
You know, single wins and wins and losses don't really hurt anybody that deeply these days. So not huge deal for Styles, but it's not also not if you lose, it's how you lose. And he has lost definitively pretty much ever since.
Yeah. I mean, that loss against Joe, I was just like, oh. Like, I guess not that I was completely surprised, but I mean, and I remember thinking the same thing against, well, I kind of knew that it was coming with Kane just because you don't bring Kane back in his first match back, have him lose. So Balor answers the call. I was kind of expecting it. And I guess I was expecting this just because Joe's been on something of a rampage. And they've done a good job of presenting him strong. But Balor just, he got crushed. Yeah. I mean, he got in some spots, but man, you know, to your point, like it's how.
Yeah, and all the while, I mean, this is not something that's just rumor. I mean, he absolutely, anyone in the know who, you know, he was penciled in for the Brock Lesnar title match at the Royal Rumble, and they still did this to him.
Well, yeah, you don't have Paul Heyman mention him in a promo.
Yeah, over and over.
Numerous times without having something in mind. You know, because didn't he even come up recently when he was doing the whole disrespecting Jinder Mahal promo, I think, even?
Yeah, and also while promoting the match with AJ Styles, he got a quick line about, you know, Finn Balor being, you know, every, you know, I think it was something along the lines of AJ Styles is the best performer in this business, with the exception of Finn Balor, or other than Finn Balor, or something along those lines. I think.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, that was always definitely in the plans, and now those plans are out the window for seemingly no reason. There was no reason that Kane and Samoa Joe couldn't have, you know, beaten anyone else on the roster And
Yeah, or at least show that he has a fighting chance against a guy that's larger than him, so that you can help show that Brock Lesnar narrative that, maybe he could pull this off. He almost did it against him. He almost did it against him. Like, at least something to build on, but there is nothing there. Unless you're gonna have him beat Kane after Kane loses to Strowman.
Yeah, I mean, they before Kane goes away to start his political career, they owe that to Finn Balor. Yeah, Strowman can get his pound of flesh first, but Balor needs that win back badly.
Yeah, so I guess it'll be interesting to see if that happens. But for the time being, yeah, Finn Balor is in some type of hell. But I mean, I guess the one thing is that you kind of mentioned about it that he isn't a main eventer because how'd you word that?
A self-fulfilling prophecy.
I mean, it still seems to me that the crowd is reacting well for him.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I
They're
mean,
definitely.
it's definitely not the crowd that is the crowd, despite all of these problems, have not lost faith in him. So that'll be kind of the interesting thing if there is a boil over point. It probably helps that a lot of the same people that like Finn Balor also like Samoa Joe and are not going to get that bent out of shape about the situation.
Right. Yeah. There was so many other ways, around all this. I mean, the only real, I mean, the only real, thought that there is for me to have is that Vince McMahon never believed in Finn Balor in that spot to begin with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was really shocked that that they put him in that spot to start with. So, just because, I mean, he really is. He's another guy that he's just really on the smaller side. Like, AJ Styles probably has a good, like, 15, 20 pounds on Finn Balor. And I know that Styles isn't, the largest of competitors, but Balor's pretty small, and that is definitely not a Vince type. Because even if you look back on it, Daniel Bryan put on a decent chunk of muscle after he got to the WWE. Like he definitely beefed up as much as he could, and Balor's is obviously in exceptionally good shape, but he doesn't look like he's added any muscle mass in the meantime, or changed the way he trained. I just assume that Brian changed the way he trained to concentrate on, some size difference. But that certainly does not seem to be in the offing for Balor at all.
Yeah, no. I mean, is there anyone on the roster more cut than Finn Balor?
Oh, Tony Nese, but that might be
Well,
it.
yeah, you're right, and Tony Nese certainly does have more muscle mass. But no, I mean, I don't think anyone. I mean, once again, he's not a tall guy. He's a naturally kind of skinny guy. So I get it, but I don't think he's in any way in a quote unquote drug tested environment, I don't think he's going to look any bigger than he is right now.
Oh, gotcha. You know, the one thing that I'm looking at here now, which did kind of coincide with the Finn Balor, Braun Strowman stuff, that also connected with the women, they did have an interesting part there with Asuka. You know, not feeling the wrath of Absolution. That was certainly an interesting choice.
Yeah, no, they definitely are building to something. I mean, Paige said the line to Sasha about you're either with us or against us. So I imagine that they're you know, the story is going to be that they're courting Asuka to join them. Because why wouldn't you want Asuka on your side? So, and then I guess, you know, obviously, eventually Asuka will say no in, you know, a violent fashion. So, yeah, no, yeah. It was definitely interesting. It was well played. I'm glad there wasn't any physicality in the during the first meeting. I'm glad they didn't, you know, neither side really gave up, you know, what they're about or how they feel about each other.
Yeah, it was well played. Like I don't mind holding off on that situation. So yeah, it was sometimes the long game doesn't happen for the WWE. So it's nice to see that happen in this occasion. I guess another man that's kind of interesting that is definitely in my opinion did not have very much time in NXT but is doing quite well for himself. One Elias Sampson, I would have to say, has made the most out of a short NXT stay, much like some of these ladies. Like I mean, to me, that is the upside for one of these ladies, I suppose, or that kind of level on the women's roster. He has really shot up in a hurry.
Yeah, he definitely has. He's definitely... It's the darndest thing. So many things, so many acts from NXT come up, and they don't work on the main roster. This was an act that everyone hated in NXT, that's working on the main roster. Maybe dropping the nickname The Drifter and just calling him Elias is actually helps. But no, it is working. He is
much
more palatable on Raw than he was in NXT.
Yeah, he is legit getting some good booing on him for his act. And
although I have no idea why people were booing that the amazing performance last night with Curtis and Bo on the harmonicas, because that was amazing.
Oh man, I really did just laugh at that one. I'm just like, oh my god, like I'm like, why is this? I was wondering why it was funny. It was like they started air harmonica-ing and I just lost it. I was just like, oh my gosh, like yeah, really entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very, very entertaining. He the match with Roman Reigns, fortunately, was nothing to write home about. It was a very long match, highlighted by about 4 minutes in a chin lock. Not very exciting. But once again, there's two to tango. Roman Reigns is still be the veteran in that situation. And the star. And you could argue that it was more on Roman Reigns to make people believe that Elias had a chance to beat him, a la John Cena when he was defending the U.S. title every week, than on Elias to make people believe that he could beat Roman Reigns.
Yeah, he had a couple of good spots there at the end. I have not ever seen him go with a top rope elbow. Reigns did take that in the sit-down powerbomb. I'm not sure you want anyone kicking out of his finisher right now. So I do think that it's probably for the best that they save Elias from having that happen right now. So I don't know what else he has in his arsenal, you know? It's kind of interesting. I mean, that's probably his first long match in the WWE. Like, I mean,
yeah,
he didn't really wrestle that many matches in NXT, and they weren't particularly long, at least any of them that I saw.
Yeah, no, in NXT, he was never really put in any major angles. He was never... I mean, people didn't really take to him in NXT, even in the easiest building in the world to get a reaction outside of maybe where PWG plays, but he was definitely someone who was consistently booed at Full Sail University, and arguably not in a good way.
I would definitely agree with that, and it is kind of funny, like you said, like some of these gimmicks just flatline. I mean, you could go back to some of the ladies. Bailey has just not translated. Sasha Banks really hasn't translated at all. Like gimmicks that you kind of thought were surefire have fizzled out quickly. And Samson, nope, no problems whatsoever.
Not at all. And good for him. I think he's earned his spot. Whatever that spot will end up being.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't put him in too high profile of a situation. But, you know, moving in for one of those open challenge type situations is always a good way to highlight some guy that you think is on the upward trajectory. So, you know, I think that's a pretty fun spot for him to be in. Whether that was a great match and it was either his fault or Roman's fault, hopefully in the long run, you know, it'll benefit him just because he was finally in that length of a match on Raw itself. And I'm scrolling back through here. Wow, there really was not a whole lot else. Like, I did love the Seth Rollins Cesaro match, but again with Raw, it was pretty much everything downhill for the most part after that.
Yeah, no, nothing really else. I mean, that was just a good match. I mean, it's almost sad that, you know, you know, up and down most wrestling cards today, you will find, you know, quality matches up and down. So, you know, that a match like that doesn't even really stand out as much as it would have in another era, especially as something that was airing on free TV. But yeah, no, it was just a good match.
Yeah. And it's sad to say that something else since that about covers Raw, the something else that popped into my head as far as things that did happen at least this week was the official unformation of the Hype Bros.
Oh, breaking my heart.
Mojo Rawley definitely got an earlier call up than I expected in a lot of ways, but when
Completely
you
undeserving, but okay. But
huh
yeah.
you said undeserving. Well, I mean, I kind of thought it was for Samson, to be completely honest with you.
Oh, it totally, but based on his performances in NXT and his placement in NXT, it was definitely somewhat undeserving. But I guess he proved himself. Mojo has not to me. Hopefully he can be a better heel. Maybe his naturally annoying demeanor will work better. Actually, you know what? It has to work better as a
That kind of it was kind of funny. They played them kind of like an odd couple. And I never completely got that. Like, they were different kind of types of dude bros, too, that didn't seem like they were meant to be together. So, if nothing else, it's probably better off that that they're separated. So we shall see. I don't despise him the way you do, but I also don't think that he's really done a whole lot to deserve more than he's gotten either. I will forever feel bad for Zack Ryder creating the WWE Network and Zack Ryder getting shit on because of it. But, outside, Mojo Rawley, I do not have that feeling for. He's just kind of there. So, I don't know. Anything else really? Or are we just shutting up shop early this week?
I guess we could throw something in about the Bullet Club of Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks intend to self-promote their own show somewhere in the United States, or somewhere in the world, and draw 10,000 people.
I think that that is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically based on something Dave Meltzer said about an ROH show never being able to hit 10,000. And now, I guess, Cody Rhodes, who has all the confidence in the world in himself and his friends, is saying, okay, I'll take that bet. And now they're apparently it's very serious.
Because I remember reading that they had it down to four cities that they thought that they'd possibly do it in. I believe I was holding out hope that it would be Chicago, I think was one of them, just because geographically it's the closest.
Yeah, if they did something in Chicago and you were up for it and some of our other pals from around the country were up for it, I would certainly consider doing Chicago for something certainly would be a unique wrestling experience.
Yeah, 'cause that's one of those things where I think I mentioned on one of the shows recently that my DVR took a dump and stopped remembering all of the programs that I recorded. And I finally got myself organized enough to remember to set Ring of Honor to record. And I was immediately rewarded with an excellent promo from Marty Scurll, who is also part of the Bullet Club. And I kind of dig what those guys are doing in a lot of ways. And I think Kenny Omega has mentioned it too, like, oh, fuck it, I'm not going to the WWE. I'm going to try and make us compete with the WWE. Like, that's kind of our goal. And they all kind of seem to have that mindset. And, you know, trying to go for this 10,000-seat arena thing, I'm like, oh, I love it. Like, like, that's the kind of confidence. Like, even if I don't think... And maybe at this point I haven't seen enough of Cody Rhodes' work on the indie scene to truly be accurate in my portrayal of how he's done. You know, I do kind of love the confidence. I love a lot of the guys that they would probably bring in to wrestle.
Yeah, yeah. It was a combined effort of ROH and New Japan and maybe some other, you know, outside work. I mean, there's, you know, if, you know, depending on the date of this thing, could Daniel Bryan be available for it? That, you know, hell, you know.
Yeah.
If it's in Chicago and UFC is willing to let him do it, could CM Punk be a part of it? He's friends with, you know, still, I'm like, you know, friends with most of those guys in the Bullet Club.
Yeah,
he grew up with. So yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of potential for it. I mean, they're not looking to, you know, run as a promotion looking to, you know, do 10,000, you know, a night, you know, like, as if it's, you know, the WWF during the Attitude Era where every house show was selling out, you know, in advance, but
right.
As a time special thing, with the right lineup and the right promotion, especially with, you know, all the means that they have of marketing at their fingertips, in particular their Hot Topic deal, social media, YouTube, Ring of Honor television, New Japan TV, possibly. I wouldn't necessarily bet against them.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Even if you get Jericho involved, who obviously is probably only got, you know, the deal for Wrestle Kingdom for the most part, he probably might do the next day or something like that.
Yeah,
but I would think that his run over there would be pretty limited, but. He's another name that, you know, if they're thinking about this already, I'm assuming they're talking to him already.
Yeah, I imagine that he's one of the people they're talking to. I imagine, once again, I almost feel like these, you know, these are dumb guys. And, you know, maybe, you know, them saying that, you know, we'll do this ourselves, we'll fund this ourselves, you know, that might be kind of like a, you know, You know, them saying, hey, you know, we're going to do this. So if you want to jump on and find and help fund this, it'd be a good investment.
Yeah. And they did say that within the U.S. that ROH has their exclusive contract. So they definitely need to work through ROH in a lot of capacities. So they would obviously be the ones more than likely helping out in any way.
They all have a lot of connections. They would probably get a number of sponsorships, you know, and partnerships, and, you know, to go with this. I can see them doing something of a mini convention along with it, with, you know, with lots of vendors. It's something that they. That I don't think they're gonna let it, you know, lose them money.
Oh,
I mean, even if you try to set your talent, but your budget to the point where even if you only draw 5,000, you're still breaking even or turning a small profit. Yeah, you could certainly do it that way.
Yeah, I would think so, because the 10,000 seat arena still isn't that large. You know, I would imagine when you start talking about trying to, you know, rent out a true arena, which is, to me, somewhere between 15 to 20,000. You know, and I guess I'm just going to base average for a basketball slash hockey venue.
Yeah, I mean, like in Chicago, I know, I believe Impact used, was it the Sears Arena or the Sears Center years ago? It's basically this 10,000 seat arena in the city that, like, no one uses.
Oh.
So that might be an ideal place for it, and you could probably get a great deal on a place that's struggling
to fill
dates.
I would imagine something like that. And I'm trying to think, like, I feel like TNA in some of the earlier days when I was still doing, you know, the architecture of wrestling columns there, that they used a couple of venues that were, you know, like small college arenas are, you know, tend to be in that 6 to 10,000 range. So that's always a possible option that they could look at. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely something. I'm glad you brought it up, because that was something that caught my eye earlier today that I wanted to have. I should start writing some shit down, or at least typing it down digitally.
That's definitely an amazing undertaking. To point it out, no one other than WWE has put 10,000 people in a building in the U.S. since WCW even started to go under, because after they started to go under, they weren't putting 10,000 people into pretty much any building in the last year or so. So it's been over 17 years since anyone has accomplished such a feat outside of WWE.
Yeah, the possibilities.
ECW never did it.
Oh, no, yeah.
No other promotion has either.
Yeah, because Wichita isn't very big there. What's the arena in Poughkeepsie? Hammerstein Ballroom.
The Hammerstein, yeah, no.
That's only like 2,500, I think, or something in that area.
They played some 5,000 seat venues. I specifically remember, them saying that they had their biggest crowd in Chicago, which might have been somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000.
Yeah, I mean, I think I already said it. I hope they do it. So, yeah, that's pretty wild that it's been that long that a non-WWE event, has gone, this long. But, you know, I guess a lot of people have said it. There hasn't been a rival, and, you know, with, ROH and New Japan kind of sharing talent, and New Japan really kind of making inroads the last couple of years. You know, even 5 years ago, I'm not sure that something like this is a possibility. But just the way things are now, it is a real possibility.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's very possible. Once again, with the right promotion and the right lineup, and, you know, how hot they appear to be, especially with how well their merchandise is selling at Hot Topic, how much Bullet Club merchandise you see out there. Yeah, it's definitely something that's really catching on, even, outside of wrestling. Yeah, I think this is very likely worth doing, and it's definitely the right time to do it.
Okie dokie. Well, I think this is the right time to finish the show. I will talk about the Four String Brewing Hilltop Heritage Lager that I am drinking currently. An interesting thing in the craft brewery department has certainly been a lot of places coming up with their own version of basically Budweiser. And I'll tell you what, the craft beer version, I don't really enjoy it any more than I do the regular version. But we bought this for a recipe, and I will dutifully drink it and support one of my local breweries. So there is the Bell Time beer for this week's show. You can find us on at Stunt Granny. He is at Chris Calamita. I am at DeFrango11. And that is all for tonight, grandkids. Enjoy.